You're listening to the Holistic Spaces podcast, brought to you by Mindful Design Feng Shui School. Episode 272, Ancient Greek Decluttering and Space Clearing Rituals with George Lizos. Welcome to episode 272 of the Holistic Spaces podcast, where we hope to inspire, educate, and empower you to create your own holistic spaces that nurture and resonate with you. Angie Cho and Laura Morris are the founders of the Mindful Design Feng Shui School and authors of Mindful Living, A Guide to the Everyday Magic of Feng Shui. We teach Feng Shui online at mindfuldesignschool.com. You can sign up for our mailing list looking in the show notes or visiting mindfuldesignschool.com/join. And we have special free content, workshops, and events available only to our newsletter subscribers. So this week, we have a special guest, and we don't often have guests, but we actually almost never have a guest, but we had to make an exception for George because George is just amazing. And we're really excited to hear about his new book, which is called Secrets of Greek Mysticism. And he's going to teach us a little bit about ancient Greek decluttering and space clearing rituals. So I'm just going to introduce George really quick. He's a number one best-selling author of Protect Your Light, Like Workers Gotta Work, and Be the Guru, and the new book that's coming out any day now. What day is it coming out, George?
April 8th.
Okay. I think this is launching on April 8th, right? Okay. Yeah. So we're celebrating. Yay.
We're celebrating.
Congratulations. Okay. But Secrets of Greek Mysticism. And he's also the host of Can't Host and the Lit Up Lightworker podcast, which I've been a guest on a couple times, and just very honored to have George as a friend and colleague. He's also a practicing priest of Hellenic polytheism at the world's first modern temple of Zeus in Cyprus. So you can learn more about him at georgelizos.com. His Instagram is georgelizos. And so welcome, George.
Hi, Angie, and hi, Laura. Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, we're so happy to have you. And I'm so glad to have you. And I guess I wish you guys could see George, but he's wearing this like rainbow jacket and he's so cute and handsome. And he's always like posting like Ken poses on Instagram. You have to follow him and check him out. But also it's been such a delight because George, Laura, and myself have so much in common that we really love working with people and teaching them about healing practices. And also I think the three of us have really explored and dove into our own cultural heritage. And so I really love this part about your book that's coming out, Secrets of Greek Mysticism, because it's related to your cultural background and you really bring this together with the work, the amazing healing work that you do in the world, George.
Yeah. And you know what I really love about being on this podcast is that my spiritual journey started from Feng Shui. So Feng Shui was the first spiritual modality I started practicing when I was 15. So I dove into like the Chinese philosophy, and then that brought me to the Greek one eventually. And now I'm finding the commonalities between the two, which is fascinating. It's like such a coming home kind of experience.
Yeah, actually, Laura, I don't know if she's heard this story, but I have on your podcast. Can you share with the listeners your story about when you started diving into Feng Shui and your local store and everything, the fountain store?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I told you that story.
Yes.
It was when I went through a very tough time in my life and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to find ways to empower myself. So a Feng Shui book popped up and I'm like, okay, I'm going to use this to like manifest a boyfriend. I activated like the left corner of my room and I did manifest a boyfriend. And then I became so fascinated with it that I found a Feng Shui shop in Cyprus and I would just visit like casually to just spend time there. They had like fountains, like Feng Shui fountains with like different symbols on them. I would chat to the owner. And then eventually they had this home expo in Cyprus and they were just featuring there. And I just happened to pass by and people would come and they would ask the owner questions. And I would pop in and answer their questions for them. Like, oh, you should go with this fountain because it's great for activating abundance in that area of your house. Oh, you should place that one at the entrance to bring abundance in, to the point that the owner hired me for the weekend. I was 15 and it was my first job and I worked at the expo selling fountains. That was so much fun.
Always an entrepreneur, always selling something. Or actually,
indeed.
Just just trying to help, actually. You really,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
you always had that longing to share your knowledge with others, and you do it so beautifully in your books.
Thank you.
So we're really excited to celebrate the pub date for your book, Secrets of Greek Mysticism. And in this book, you talk up a lot about the Greek gods and goddesses. And I read the whole book already quite a few months ago because I wrote an endorsement for you. And we thought that a great topic for this podcast could be talking about ancient Greek decluttering and space clearing rituals. So what can you tell the listeners about these ancient Greek decluttering and space clearing rituals?
So the most important day of the lunar month, because the ancient Greeks followed lunar months around the year, was the new moon, which they called Numenia. And what I find fascinating about the ancient Greeks and their relationship with their moon was that they didn't just celebrate Numenia, the new moon, and the full moon. They celebrated almost all days of the moon cycle. They had like a different god dedicated to each day. Not all of them, but a lot of the days, which shows the importance that people, the importance of the relationship that people had with the earth and the celestial bodies, such as the moon. Now, the Numenia was such an important day. It was considered the most sacred day of the month, where no festivals could be performed out in the city. No business could take place. Everybody focused on setting intentions. And one of those practices that they did during the new moon was all about decluttering and clearing out the hay house, the house altars. So going to the different altars of the house and just clearing them, replacing the offerings, cleaning, throwing away clutter from the house, and setting the intention for the month ahead. So just understanding the significance of that day had is really important. Now, when it comes to like space clearing that, which was an important practice, practiced by ancient Greeks in general, the Greek god of clearing, energy protection, and cleansing was Apollo. Now, something to note here about space clearing is that, you know, in my book, Protect Your Light, I talk about energy attachments, like different types of negative energies, like residual energy, we call them in Feng Shui, or predecessor energy, for example, that's energy left by inhabitants, and we can clear them with different tools. They considered that, first of all, they called it miasma. That was the word for it. And it wasn't just energy. They saw it as something physical. So they saw like energetic staining as something physical. So if something negative would happen in the city or in the household, like a death, for example, or someone like did a crime, for example, they would pollute the city or the household with miasma, which was a real thing that had to be cleared. And they would do either some kind of a purification ceremony with like using sacred water or using fire or using smoke, all the tools that we use currently for like space clearing to perform a clearing. Of course, in association with Apollo, the cleansing god, as well as other different types of gods. So whereas no practicing ritual survived to this day as to how to perform that, knowing the significance of that day and the kind of activities they carried give us some guidance as to how to do them ourselves. So usually during the new moon, what I do, and in the book, I have a whole like Numenia ritual, aside from setting my intentions and bringing in some manifestation practices into it, I take the time to go through my altars, to clean them, to replace the offerings, place new offerings, and also go around the house and just see, okay, what clutter have I created in the house that doesn't need to be here? What has taken up space that's creating this miasma in the house that needs to be cleared? So with this perspective, we can start creating our own kind of practices to guide ourselves through the lunar month.
I think that's so insightful and so helpful, I think, because there's a lot of listeners that do pay attention to the moon cycles, and so they already kind of have a sense of that. But I love the emphasis on seeing what's happening in your altar space, because that is so connected to your intention, and people create altars or shrines to tie into their healing or their spiritual practices. And when we neglect those areas and dust accumulates, it can be an indication that we're actually neglecting our spiritual path, right?
100%, because altars, they are bridges between the profane and the sacred. they create a portal that we can communicate with the divine. So if we let our altars gather dust, or we don't spend time there, then we are losing, not losing, but disconnecting a little bit, distancing ourselves from that connection that we have with the divine. And something that's really important to note here is that the gods don't really want us to give them offerings. They don't really need our prayers. We do. So we don't set the altars. Yeah, it's for us. The gods don't care. But we do set the altars because we want to feel closer to the gods. We want to connect with the gods and feel this sense of connectedness. So if we neglect that, we are neglecting our own connection with ourselves and therefore the divine.
Yeah, because all of the spiritual work we do often is really for our benefit, because like even if we talk about like, say, a color association or a position in the home, while there's an energetic connection there that's universal, there's also, it's a way for our human minds to kind of click into that. And we sometimes need that to have it make sense to connect that heaven and earth. And so, like you said, it's absolutely a reflection of your disconnection, which is okay. It happens. Like, I think you, I don't know if you still have it in the book, but at the end you, in your
epilogue.
Yeah. You were talking about how you had gotten so busy, and I was watching you. You were on like Instagram. You're like doing plays and you're running around, and you had noticed that, you know, parts of your healing practices had gone to the wayside. But I think, you know, in exchange for other passions you were pursuing. And so it's totally okay if we do have dust accumulate on our altars, yeah. But to have a regular time that we notice and check in is really just so helpful. Just like, it's just like waking up every morning and brushing your teeth, right?
Yeah, and what I say in that story, because that really is a foundation of the book, because I spend so much time in the book talking about the complexities of the different gods and different rituals and symbols and colors, etc., which are all fascinating and we love them. And when we do them, they work. So when we work them, they work for us as well. And I found myself like doing a thousand different things and had neglected my spiritual practice completely. And then I found my notebook from when I did my priesthood training in Athens in 2017. And there was a note that I've taken from my trainer. And he told us, you're all swimming. We're all swimming in an ocean of the gods. We don't really have to search out to find them because we're already part of that ocean of the divine. All we have to do is realize that we are part of that ocean. So in that moment, I'm like, you know what? I closed my eyes, I placed one hand on my heart, and I said, I am aware. And that's a powerful practice, because when you say, I am aware, you become aware of your divinity. You become aware of this connectedness with the universe, with the gods. And that connectedness then guides you to go back to your practice, rather than trying to convince yourself and motivate yourself, oh, I need to get back to my practice. Once you find that connectedness with just a moment of inner peace, you know, like, ah, I feel so good. I want to light up a candle and go to my altar and do a ritual.
Yeah. And I think that's something that Angie and I talk a lot about, is keeping things very simple and finding that simplicity and those practices that they don't have to be. I think a lot of times our listeners or people that are really striving to do these practices think that they need to be really, really, really complicated or, you know, very rigorous. And in your book, you give such simple ways to connect with the goddesses and the gods. And I think that simple, or being easy and simple, it doesn't necessarily denote that it isn't as powerful. So I like that, you know, you were talking about just to take a breath and to reconnect. So you have in your book, you do talk about ways to work with the new moon and do these clearings. But can we talk, because we chatted a little bit, obviously, before we got started in recording, about temples. And you've been interested in feng shui for so long that you see the synchronicities in the two practices. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because that's really cool.
Yeah, because this information is not in the book. It's just my own personal interest mm-hmm. in like thinking about both feng shui and then like spatial energetics in ancient Greece. And what I find fascinating is that the difference between earth-based temples, meaning belonging to like pagan traditions, and modern churches, for example, is that pagan earth-based temples, they add to nature and they flow with nature and they follow natural rhythms and structures, whereas sometimes modern churches tend to impose nature rather than go with the flow. For example, when you look at the ancient Greek temples, there are no straight lines because there are no straight lines in nature either. All the sharp corners, they are usually covered with a pillar, so you don't have sharp corners, which is a foundation in feng shui. Now, what I said about not having straight lines, well, someone might say, well, the Parthenon is straight. It's not. Because when you look, for example, at the floor, it's not actually flat. It's a little bit curvy. And that's made for this purpose, to not create a straight line. At the same time, when you look at the pillars, they look like they go straight up into the sky, but they have a slight bend to them. Okay, so when you keep extending them, they're eventually going to create a pyramid symbolizing the fire and therefore the divine masculine and therefore yang energy. And when you look at the base of the structure, it's rectangular, which symbolizes the earth and therefore yin, the divine feminine. So you have this balance of yin and yang within the Parthenon, which is like an example of all Greek temples, most Greek temples that follow the same kind of structure. At the same time, the marble it's made of, especially the marble at the ceiling, it's not existent anymore, but it used to. It was a sort of porous marble that allowed natural light to come in. So even though it was covered, natural light would come in because they appreciated the importance of being in alignment with nature. So that was basically what I found was really fascinating, how different cultures around the world that didn't have a connection came to the same conclusions. Another fun fact is that at the center of the Bagua map, for example, you have health. It's symbolized by, like, it's the health of the house, essentially. It's where all the energy comes to, like, create this center. Same thing with Greek houses. At the center of the house, they had the hearth, the place of coming together, which is symbolized and embodied by Hestia. The equivalent is a Roman Vesta, who is the goddess of the hearth, the goddess of the house. And Hestia was at the center of every city, of every state, of every house, of our own bodies, in our hearts. So that is where health is. And it always had a lit up fire. If the fire was extinguished, that means either the inhabitants of the house died or the city fell. And that's happened, sadly, in most cities in the ancient times. And final thing I want to share, and a great similarity, of course, there are many, but these are my favorite ones. The Parthenon has been standing there for so long. It's gone through so many wars and it's still standing there. Why? Because energetically, it's built on ley lines. It's built on energetically powerful states that ensure that it remains standing there. Behind, you have the protective mountains, again, aligned with feng shui principles, creating this stable foundation. Okay, thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
No, when you were saying these things, so many things are going through my head. You know, in Italy, which I spend a lot of time in, there are temples of, they're Roman, but similar gods, just different names. And, you know, for instance, we were talking earlier, my goddess that I really connect with is Minerva. And I went to the temple of Minerva in Assisi, but it is no longer the temple because they put a Baroque church inside it. And it's this idea of continuing to layer and because I think there is a powerful center there and they continue to use that same site. And when they dig, they find even predecessing, you know, all the, it's this power of this continual, like you saw, they pick these spots for a reason. It's so interesting. And, you know, Angie and I have always encouraged our listeners and our students to find these of your own culture. And, you know, feng shui was the way I did it as well. I became interested in feng shui and then I became more interested in my own heritage and culture. And I loved your book. I loved the way you had such a great way to connect with goddesses and gods. And it's a practice, you know, spirit guides and, you know, saints, and also cultivating connection with gods and goddesses is something that I've been working on. And so I really loved the passage you had on Minerva, and I loved you, well, each of them. And you go into detail on how to connect with each of these. It's really beautiful. It's really
lovely.
Thank
you. And something that I really wanted, I thought it was really important for me to communicate in the book, is that when we think about the gods and goddesses, we usually think about mythology and how they're portrayed in mythology. And the point that I wanted to make in the book is that mythology and theology are two different things. Mythology draws from theology, but not the other way around. In the sense that, let's say, for example, Ares, the god of war, we see him as the god of war in mythology, but he's really the god of bravery and courage that helps us follow our life purpose and take action. Sometimes the most loving thing you can do is fight. What if you're being attacked by someone? Are you going to send them love and light? No. You're going to fight back. You're going to protect yourself. When you see someone being bullied, you're going to stand up for them. That's Ares' energy. So when we stop thinking of the gods as solely the jealous, combative kind of gods we see in myths, then we find something else. So what are the gods? They are universal laws and universal functions portrayed by humans in specific ways. For example, Athena, she is the law. She doesn't carry the law. She is the embodiment of the law and the function of wisdom and strategy and civilization. She's the goddess of civilization because she holds all the knowledge that allow people to bring things together and expand and develop human consciousness. So by thinking about the gods in that way, we start finding ways to connect with them on a much more personal level and a much more relatable level. And what I've aimed to do in the book is have different levels of working with the gods. I start with ethical philosophy, like the virtues of the gods that we can use to embody so we can become virtuous humans. So for example, with Athena slash Minerva, her virtues are fortitude and quickness of mind. And I go into detail as to how to bring those qualities into our lives. But then we have like symbolic levels of connection with her. The colors, golden, red, blue, gray, pale yellow, symbols, the Aegis, the shield, the spear, the Gorgon head. Her sacred animal, the owl, sacred plants, the olive tree, the offerings, olive oil, olive branch that we can use to create the altar. And of course, my favorite one, a mantra. A mantra that starts with an I, because we are the gods. The gods are not outside of us. We are part of the gods. They are not out there and we're trying to gain their favor. We don't have a transactional relationship with them. Their grace has already been given. It's just a matter of accepting it. Mm-hmm. So when we have an affirmation for each god that starts with an I, we bring that god's essence already into our body and we train our subconscious to think that I'm not praying to Athena to grant me something. I'm appreciating Athena's presence within me. So her mantra is, I turn knowledge into action, which is taking that wisdom and then putting it into action, creating civilization.
Laura, is this why Minerva slash Athena is your favorite goddess?
I think there's respect in that. I am, you know, in feng shui, we talk a lot about different elements and water is wisdom, connected with wisdom. And that's what I have a lot of. But also symbols have been showing up for me. And so, you know, looking and then when you do some exploration, it's, you know, what's been coming up. And so when I was reading your book and I was like, yep, okay, yeah, it was really great. And, but your meditations and your kind of walkthroughs on how to connect that, I'm going to play around with that because I've never done that. So I'm excited about it.
George, who's your favorite Greek god or goddess and why?
Well, we all have a guardian god or goddess, meaning someone that is meant to guide us throughout our lives, if we choose to. Now, my favorite one is Apollo, because he's the god of everything and I do everything. Like, you know me, Angel, like I have like so many different passions, and Apollo is that as well. He's the god of music and the god of the arts, and then he does energy protection, and then he also does sports, because why not? So there's just so much, but really, so that's the superficial level of the god. Okay, that's the mythological aspect. At the center of it, his affirmation is, I am light. He's light, he's harmony. So what's common among all these different aspects? Harmony. They've helped harmonize the earth. Music creates harmonies. Sports create harmony. Energy protection brings harmony into spaces. So he brings in the light that just raises the vibration of everything.
So I don't actually have a favorite Greek god or goddess, but since Laura knows me really well, Laura, is there one you would pick for me?
Oh, I don't know, George. What do you think?
Can I, because I know you work with the Buddhist ones, right? Sorry, with Buddhist deities, isn't it?
I do a little bit. A little bit, but we don't, Yeah, I mean, there's Kuan Yin and
Yes.
the Buddha, and then, but I wouldn't say that. I don't know. I don't think I have a favorite god or goddess. Although I do kind of appreciate the wrathful deities in Buddhism, like in Tibetan Buddhism. And there was one that I slept under during this one museum event I went to. We got to sleep under Tonkas, and I
Yes.
slept below this wrathful deity who's red, and she has a bow and arrow, but it's made of flowers.
Okay. So, and what are the qualities? There's a reason I'm asking this question, and I'm going to explain, but what are the qualities? What is the essence of that goddess?
Well, I mean, with the wrathful deities, they show a lot of fierce compassion. So they're often standing on top of like skull heads.
Yeah.
And so they're pushing something down, protecting, they're protected, they're protector deities. But the idea that she is holding a bow and arrow that's made of flowers, so she's actually not looking to harm, but using beauty to be precise. Is that Artemis or something? I'm thinking of the bow and arrow.
It is Artemis. So it is Artemis. So the reason I'm asking this is because with all pagan religions and traditions, what the people did at the time, because what are earth-based traditions at their basic level? They are a representation of people's relationship with the divine through nature, through following the cycles of nature. So people have been observing nature and personifying different universal laws and changes within the natural world. And although different cultures around the world have given different names and different essences and characteristics to these gods, they are all defining the exact same laws because the laws are the same. It's just their way of defining them based on their temperament and their culture. That's why, for example, Minerva is Athena. That's why the Celtic goddess Rhiannon could be compared to Aphrodite, or Ishtar, again, could be compared to Aphrodite. Because there are so many commonalities because the laws of the universe are the same. So once you talked about that goddess, Artemis was the one who came up because she's a protectress, but she's also very feminine. So Artemis, she's the pure, raw, wild aspect of the divine feminine. She's unbridled divine feminine energy. She's uncontrollable. She's the energy of the orgasm. She's the energy of teenage women just turning into women. She's the energy of women giving birth. It's uncontrollable. You cannot do it. But that energy is raw. And that's what Artemis is. So she's fierce and protective, but at the same time, she's sweet and beautiful and loving.
That sounds like you, Angie.
Well, I looked up the name of the, because I couldn't remember the name of the goddess. Her name is Kurukula. Yeah, so she's a wrathful deity, and she holds a bow and arrow made of flowers. So wonderful. So I do have a favorite Greek goddess then. So Laura, you approve?
Yeah, like we're two sides of a coin, I think. You know, we've got Athena on one side, who's a little bit more like by the book, I'm going to say, and, you know, a little bit more buttoned up. But then you're the creative, passionate feminine energy. So we've got both sides covered.
Yeah, but we
and
have
that's
both
what I love.
Of those.
That's what I love about the Greek gods and goddesses, because we have six male deities and six female ones, all representing different aspects of the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And it's all beautiful and it's all perfect. So usually when people ask me like, ooh, which god is coming in more strongly right now? I'm like, all of them. Because if we are to separate them, that means we are remaining in springtime all year long, but we cannot, because the earth is shifting and we need to shift as well.
It's like classic yin yang. You can't always want it to be yang. It's going to tip into yin. It's going to keep circling around. And, you know, that's the beauty of it, is the change, is the cycle.
The change. And that's why we work with the wheel of the year. So people are familiar with the Celtic wheel of the year. I'm not familiar with the Chinese one, but with the Greek calendar, we have the Greek wheel of the year, that instead of having eight festivals like the Celtic one, we have 12 festivals. So every month there is a different festival, again, aligned with the cycles of nature, yin and yang energy.
Yeah. And you also said that there's a Greek god and goddess for each Bagua area too. And that's in your book, or no?
It's not in the book. It's just my own fun, geeky interest of like thinking, ooh, which god would go in each Bagua? Because right now, I Bagua every single surface I find in front of me. Okay.
No, George is, Laura, I knew you would love George. George is like, he's always extra, super extra on everything. So tell us, we want to know.
So, okay, so
right now,
Tell the Bagua for Athena and then for Artemis. What would those be? Do you?
Okay, so I have my cheat notes over here.
Yeah.
My cheat sheet. So Athena would go into creativity and children because she's the creative energy of turning knowledge into action. So that's where I would put Athena. Okay. And then when it comes to Artemis, let me find her over here. Okay, I would put Artemis. There are a few places where she can be. She can be in the love corner because if you need that raw divine feminine energy, you can put her over there. Or she can even go into the helpful people because she has that quickening kind of energy that she can bring in. Now, Athena, aside from the creativity, of course, she can go into the knowledge area of the mm-hmm. Bagua because she brings that wisdom there. Mm-hmm. But I like to go beyond the stereotypical definitions of the goddesses, like, oh, Athena is wisdom, because she's more than wisdom. She's the changing of the wisdom into something practical, into something mm-hmm. real. And that's why you would also put her in creativity.
She's a manifester.
She's a manifester. Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. And then she works really well with Hephaestus. Mm. Who also turns knowledge into action, but in a more practical way. In the ancient times, he's like the god of like steel making. So because he used like ancient technologies to like literally create things with his hands, and therefore people would call upon him to create things, to build things. Now, if you think about it, because the gods are contextual, they adapt to the context. He's like the god of AI, technology, mm. high tech, all mm-hmm. of that.
It's like American okay. gods.
Wait, and then one more, just one more, and then we could go on forever, but just one more with Apollo. What about Apollo, which is your favorite, George?
Oh, Apollo goes into fame. I mean, he brings in the light.
Mm-hmm.
Makes so things, right now, puts on
bright.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Brings in the light. Mm-hmm. So right now on my desk that I'm sitting right now, which is perfectly Baguad, on my love corner, I have Aphrodite, okay? On my wealth corner, I have Zeus. I don't have Apollo because sadly I have my laptop, so I cannot put a statue of him here. And in the center, kind of, I have Asclepius, who is the Greek god of healing, the son of Apollo. And you're familiar with his symbol. Everybody's familiar with his symbol mm-hmm. because it's the rod with a snake wrapped around it, which is a modern symbol Caduceus. Of medicine. Mm-hmm. No, the caduceus is actually the symbol of Hermes because it's a rod with wings and two snakes interlocking. Oh. People confuse them. This okay. is a rod of Asclepius that is, again, one stick, no wings, and one snake wrapped around it. And that is the symbol of medicine. But sometimes people confuse it okay. with the caduceus. But that caduceus is the symbol of enlightenment.
Fun fact, that's the fact of the podcast, folks. There you go. That was great. I had no idea.
Well, thank you so much, George. It's been so wonderful. And congratulations on your fourth book.
This is the fourth one, yes.
Fourth book, yeah. Secrets of Greek Mysticism, that just comes out today, the same day that the podcast comes out. And it's so funny because I remember when I started writing the last book, or the one before that, I was telling George, and he's like, I started writing one too. And you had just started writing this one.
And yeah.
We're addicted to writing books.
And guess what, Angie? I have another one coming out this year. In November, I have another one called Ancient Manifestation Secrets, which is like a blend of this one and Protect Your Light. So based on like the Kybalion and the seven laws of the universe. Cause we're masochistic as that.
So like George has so much energy. He's like in like plays and he's doing all these dance numbers and he's
big Apollo energy.
Yeah, he goes to ceramics. He makes ceramics. He writes all these books. He works with clients. I mean, he has a mystery school. I mean, he just does it all. We need some of your energy, George. I don't have it anymore.
I feel like, you know what? People ask me, like, when are you going to stop? I'm like, why should I stop? Because when you look at the ancients, they were polymaths. I'm in drama school right now, and Euripides and like all the different like playwrights, they wrote like 70 plays, which is like books. And I'm like, if they could do it, then I can do it. Why be mediocre when they've set their standard that high?
Yeah, but I've lost my steam, George.
Oh, there are way more books coming out, I'm sure.
Yeah, but also, you know what? I think also this is one last thing. I think you had said one of the times I talked to you, I think on your podcast, you talked about you had decided you left London and moved back to Cyprus because you needed to be in a space that had water. London does have water, but it was more, you needed to live somewhere that has more nature. And I'm sure that's a lot to do with it, that it's like the place you live really truly supports you.
100% agree. It just lifts me up so much and gives me so much more energy. And bringing nature into my house has all, like with feng shui, has allowed me to have this energy and channel it in the right way.
Well, it's been so delightful. Everyone should go get George's book that comes out today, Secrets of Greek Mysticism. We love it. And you need to check out his podcast. Oh, he has two of them. And it's a Can't Host, and which may not be for everyone that's our listener, but there's also the Lit Up Lightworkers podcast, which would definitely be aligned with all of our listeners. And thank you so much, George. And thank you so much, listeners, for listening to another episode of the Holistic Spaces podcast. You can tune in every Monday for another episode. If you like our podcast, please share this with others. You can subscribe, leave a review. You can always support us by visiting our website at mindfuldesignschool.com. You can join our mailing list, opt in on the show notes, or you can visit mindfuldesignschool.com/join. Thank you so much. And oh, and PS, next week we're going to do an episode on feng shui space clearing too, to kind of support this one. So see you next week.